So today, your Facebook page can live on after you die, giving you a kind of virtual immortality. But what if the digital world could confer literal immortality? There's this theory called the singularity, the idea that at some point, humans and computers will merge and we'll be able to upload our thoughts and memories to some kind of undying silicon and live forever. Transhumanists like James Hughes not only think this is a great idea, they also think it's entirely possible. Charles Monroe Kane asked for a few specifics.
How far back do you think we can push death? I mean, 1,000 years, 100 years, forever?
Well, we will eventually have indefinite lifespans. There will always be accidents and self-chosen death, and then eventually the heat death of the universe. So, there's cosmic events that we probably will never be able to control. But for most people, there will be an indefinite prolongation of life.
Without splitting hairs over the word immortal, I mean, you are saying that we're not going to die.
Yes. It's a little bit more complicated than that because the question is, who are you? I mean, one of the things that will happen is that we will be radically transforming and passing our memories along to things that we currently can't even imagine and may not recognize as being us in the future. So, the question becomes kind of philosophical about what survival means.
Well, what about our bodies? I mean, are those even going to exist anymore? And is it foolish to define being alive or dead is based on this thing, this carbon thing?
I think we'll get over the notion that you have to have a meat-based body in order to exist. That's probably one of the least stable forms of incarnation that's possible. And so most of the intelligent life in the universe has probably migrated into more stable forms of artificial intelligence, and we probably will as well.
And do you see us, and is it a science fiction thing that we all know, being the cyborg, or is it something like basically you say we can't even fathom?
Well, some people probably will prefer to live in a virtual world. That's, in fact, one of the explanations for why there may not be visible signs of intelligent life in the universe is that the attractions of living in a virtual world as opposed to actually exploring space may be too great, and that intelligent species just kind of disappear into virtuality.
They're smart enough just to not be here at all. Like, yeah, right. I'm going to take off. Oh, wait. In science today, things that are literally existing now, what do you see as the technology that's going to take us there?
Well, the first step is for all of us who are currently alive to do the things which we know work, which is exercise, eat right, don't take stupid risks like smoking, and to survive long enough for the promises of technology to pay off. One of the first sets of promises will be therapies that prolong healthy longevity. And that's already been happening over the course of the last century and, 70s, the new 50, et cetera, et cetera. But we want drugs and devices and therapies that will push that even further. Then the next stage, I think, will be tiny little robots that we release into the body that will be able to find cancers and zap them, that will be able to fix sclerotic arteries, that will be able to go into the brain and zap Alzheimer's plaques. And eventually, we'll be able to set up a kind of virtual network inside your head that will allow your brain to communicate with computers and begin to back up and assist your thinking.
Yeah, that's incredible. I was wondering, you were talking about we wouldn't even necessarily be ourselves anymore. But if you're not yourself anymore, then what about your memories? Because in some ways, the memories I have, isn't that who I am?
Right. Well, this question was first asked by John Locke 350 years ago. He said, when God resurrects human beings at the end of time for the judgment, will he have to pull back together all our atoms, or won't he just pull back together our memories? Because the only thing we really have to be judged is our memories of our life. That's a fundamental question. Is are we a body? Are we this particular kind of meat that we exist in now? Or are we, in fact, a psychological thing, a thing of memory? And if that's all we are, then A, when you lose that, you also lose yourself. And B, if you can preserve that in various forms, not just as books or, video recordings or something like that, but in a computer, then you continue to exist as well.
Well, let's talk about computers for a second, because, you can't help the analogy here. If I live for 5,000 years, that's a lot of memories. I'm going to have some way to organize it. Do I just become a computer? And that doesn't even sound like that much fun to me.
Well, the current notion of becoming a computer sounds soulless and that you wouldn't have the experience of having a body
right.
and all the pleasures and so forth. But that's not what people are imagining, really. It's that you would be able to reconstitute all the experiences and all the sensations of being a living person inside a virtual self. And then you could decide which ones you wanted to keep and which ones you didn't. Maybe you give up hunger. Maybe you give up, you know, itchiness or something, you know.
Sounds reasonable. Okay.
Right. You know, meditators, and I'm a meditator, one of the things that we value about certain meditative experiences is when you lose the sense of having a body, you become one with everything. So it may be that once people make that migration into virtual existence, that they'll have greater access to those kinds of spiritual experiences.
Now, I read you're a Buddhist, right?
Mm-hmm.
At first, I was like, wait a minute, anything that's religious at any level connected with what you're writing about makes no sense at all. And then I thought, Buddhism, Buddhist. And I'm like, oh my God, this makes complete sense. How do you connect the two?
Well, it's probably going to take me at least 10,000 years to reach enlightenment. So that's the first connection.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
And also, Buddhism is, at its core, a faith that human beings, through their own effort, can achieve transcendence. And the Buddha never said that you had to eschew all the benefits of technology and
right.
medicine. In fact, Buddhism's been very embracing of science and medicine.
So do you see transcendence as transhumanism? Are they two things in one for you? Like, you're okay, by achieving one, you achieve the other?
Well, I kind of boil it down to the serenity prayer. Buddhism is about primarily about accepting the things that you can't change and having the serenity about that. And transhumanism is mostly about the courage to change the things that we can. We are at the cusp of a technological revolution which would allow everyone lives on this planet of leisure and abundance and healthy longevity. And we should have the courage to do that.
You know, there are people out there, and there's lots of them, you know them, who say that death is what gives life meaning. That finite lifespan is what makes us who we are. What do you say to those folks?
Well, then they would have been even happier in Paleolithic period than they would be today, you know, because our ancestors faced death a lot sooner, a lot more frequently, a lot more violently than we do today. I think, in fact, we're a lot happier today than our Paleolithic ancestors were, you know, carrying around their fleas and with all their teeth rotting out. And the notion that you have to have pestilence and disease and war in order to be happy and to appreciate life is just an incredibly short-sighted view. There will always be unrequited love. There will always be things that you can't have. There's only so much beachfront property. There's only so many people who can fly to the moon. So there will always be things that we want that we can't have. And human beings are very creative at stepping up their desires to face their current situation.
James Hughes is the author of Citizen Cyborg and executive director of the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Charles Monroe Kane talked with him.